From the shadows of the radio towers, this is the Gay PHX Podcast. Your community radio on demand.
It's gonna be a good day. And everything is going to go my way. It's gonna be a good day. The sun is shining bright and it's here to stay.
Hey, Phoenix. I'm Billy Foster, and if you're new here, welcome. This is the Gay PHX Podcast, and we're kicking off 2026 together and the start of a brand new season. We're genuinely excited that you're here with everything competing for your attention right now. The fact that you choose something local, something community built, something made for us, well, that means a lot. The last couple of weeks have been, well, weird and wild. Between the holidays and the mountain of work we're buried under, time completely lost all meaning. And we missed yoga because I didn't realize it was Saturday until noon, which just is par for the course for the way that we started out the new year. We did make it out on New Year's Eve and then immediately had two fires to deal with, one on a client side and one a very real, literal fire in the house. But don't worry, everyone's safe, no damage. The smart devices did their thing. We got home, we calmed the babies down, and everything was okay. So we started working because we weren't going to make it out anywhere in time. So we just started working away, and the next thing we knew, fireworks were going off, and it was officially 2026. And here we are, the start of a new year. And it often comes with a lot of pressure, resolutions, reinventions, and trying to do everything right. But we wanted to kick this season off a little differently. Today's episode isn't about perfection, it's about honesty. It's about choosing yourself, and it's about taking one step that feels real. Later in the show, we're sitting down with Donnie from Roro Dogs for an open conversation about sobriety, growth, and what it actually looks like to make changes that last without shame, without judgment, and without pretending that it's easy. If you're sober curious, if you're supporting someone you love, or if you're just rethinking how you want this year to feel, then this conversation's for you. And we're proud to share it, and we're grateful that you're here to hear it. All right, let's get to it. First, over to Brian for the events.
You're listening to Gay PHX, where community comes first.
Hey, 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 it's your Desert Den Daddy, Brian, checking the forecast and confirming 100% chance of shenanigans across the valley. January is pretending to behave, but the knights already have their hand on their waist and a look that says, you're not going home early. This week is about leaning back into people, into games that get competitive, heels that get higher, and laughter that gets louder after the second round. It's numbers being called, buttons being smashed, and spotlights finding you when you weren't planning to be seen, but secretly hope you would. From the shadows of the radio towers, this is Brian's Hot 3, where glitter is deployed with a snow shovel, innuendo is a renewable energy source, and I'll just stop by turns into a full night out. If you need a soft place to land and a hard place to stare or a reason to stay out past midnight, Daddy's got options. Let's get into it. Hot pick number one, Pat O's Bunkhouse. Bunkhouse Bingo, Wednesday, January 7th, 7 o'clock. First Wednesday of the month means the balls are out, the cards are ready, and suddenly everyone believes in luck. Bunkhouse Bingo is playful chaos with prizes on the line and side eye fully activated. Hosted by the delightful Bill Law, this is where friendly competition meets flirty distraction. Come for the prizes, stay for the crowd watching, the laughter, and the realization that yelling bingo feels way better with a drink in your hand. The bartenders keep things flowing while fate decides if tonight is your night. Hot pick number two, Newtown Saloon, Rainbow Rumble, Saturday, January 10th at 4 o'clock. Every second and fourth Saturday, it's game on. Phoenix gamers bring Rainbow Rumble to Newtown with controllers ready and bragging rights waiting to be claimed. Registration starts at 4, it's $5 to play, and there are prizes for 1st, 2nd, and 3rd place, because yes, placement matters. Expect focused faces, playful trash talk, and that moment when someone realizes that you're way better than you let on. Win or lose, you'll leave energized, entertained, and already planning the rematch. Hot pick number 3. Pat O's Bunkhouse, Turnabout, Softball Superstar Drag Show, Saturday, January 10th at 8 o'clock. High heels, big personalities, and performances that swing harder than a home run. Turnabout is back, and the Bunkhouse Batitudes are trading cleats for glam to kick off their year loud, proud, and sparkling. This is Softball Swagger meets Drag Excellence. Bold, playful, and packed with cheers. Expect strutting, sparkle, and enough charisma to fog the mirrors. The beer tenders keep the energy loud and applause flowing, while the Batitudes prove they can serve looks just as hard as they serve on the field. Phoenix, that's your hot three. Before I slip back into the night, I want to say thank you. Every listen, every share, every body in motion because of this little segment turns broadcast into connection and glitter into community. This isn't just a podcast, it's a pulse, a check-in, a reminder that queer joy doesn't evaporate when the calendar flips. We do have you, and that heartbeat is louder than anything we could ever build. It carries the signal through kitchens, cars, bars, earbuds, and bedrooms across the valley, and that's power. So stay safe, stay bold, stay hydrated because daddy worries, and stay just dangerous enough to remember you're alive. Until next time, coming to you from the shadows of the radio towers, I'm Brian, your Desert Den Daddy, and that's what's hot.
Want all the details? Head over to GayPHX.com, your one-stop shop for queer events, promos, and everything happening in the valley.
New episodes, local voices, big queer energy. Subscribe now to the Gay PHX podcast.
Buns are warm and the dogs are hot. The picnic dogs, the best they've got. Grab your pals, don't be late. And Roro Dog, it's a tasty day. Roro Dog, hey, serving smiles all day. Roro Dog, whoa, tastes so good you'll want to stay. From the grill to the groove, come join the crowd. And Roro Dog, we're proud and loud. Yeah, it's Wiener Wednesday, come on down. Wieners all over town. Big buns, big fun. Bring your friends to play. You know it's Roro Dog all the way. Ayo.
This is what community sounds like.
This is Amanda Renfrew, enrolled agent with The Tax Person, with your tax year countdown. You can still increase your 401k contribution before December 31st. Even a small bump, 1 or 2%, lowers your taxable income and strengthens retirement savings. Get support with a free 15-minute consult at thetaxperson.com or look for me as The Tax Person on socials.
More stories, more voices, more pride. You're tuned in to the Gay PHX podcast.
Today on Gay PHX, you're about to hear a story that so many people need, whether they realize it or not. Sobriety doesn't look one way. It doesn't follow a single timeline. And it doesn't mean your life stops. Often, it means your life finally starts to feel like your own again. If you're sober curious, supporting someone you love, or just trying to figure out your next right steps, this conversation's for you. Please welcome to the Rainbow Tinted Microphone, Donnie. Donnie, thank you for joining me here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you for having me.
Now, when people hear the word sobriety, they often picture one specific story, but everyone's path is different. How do you describe your relationship with sobriety?
My relationship with sobriety is a strong one, and it's one of gratitude. I come from a grateful place because I'm sober now, and I've been sober for going on 9 years. And sobriety to me means being away from my drug of choice, which was alcohol. And I think sobriety for different people means different things, but that was my addiction, and that's where my story comes from.
Congratulations on the 9 years. Now,
thank you.
Before you got sober, what was life like for you?
Before I got sober, my story of alcoholism, as many gay men my age, started in the bars. We didn't have apps to meet other guys. We met guys at bars and you drink. So I was a social alcoholic, like many of my peers throughout my 20s, 30s. And then the apps came in and it became a different scene-ish, but besides that, it started for me as I used it as a painkiller. I became a caregiver for my mom. She came down with cancer. I was in San Francisco She was in Los Angeles, in my childhood home, which was in the barrio of Los Angeles. And it's the last place I wanted to return to. But long story short, I returned. I became her full-time caregiver, and she lasted about 3 years and then finally succumbed to the cancer. Before that, I was trudging along, taking care of her. And as she started to demise, I started to get depressed. Like, why can't I fix this? Why can't I help her? And I realized I couldn't. And alcohol became a way to ease the pain. It was cheap, accessible, and I could drink as much as I wanted and then just sleep the night away as much as I could and start over again. And after my mom passed, I was alone and got more depressed and drank more. And the drinking, as alcoholics and people who are addicted know, only amplifies your depression and those feelings of loneliness. I didn't realize that. I just kept drinking. And that's where it started for me. And I'll let you ask another question, and then we could continue on if you'd like.
Sure. So was it a lack of coping mechanisms? Was it you didn't want to cope, you wanted to avoid?
I think the alcohol did two things, actually. I didn't have insurance because I became a full-time caregiver at that point for my mom. And she was incontinent, bedridden, and I did everything for her. And she was my entire life. I didn't have Donnie's life. I didn't know what that was. Mm. And once she passed, then it hit me like, who am I? What am I doing? But by that point, Billy, I had exhausted my finances. I had no insurance, no medical insurance. So anytime I had arthritis, so anytime I had an ache or a problem, a toothache, I would go to alcohol because it was a cheap, easy pain remedy. And then it also became what I thought a remedy for my depression and mental exhaustion because I was lost in myself. And family members had their own lives. They didn't know what to do with me. And so I just continued on this journey of drinking. And then I'd get sober for a few months. And I'd be like, I got this. I can control this. And I couldn't. And the guilt and the shame that is involved in that keeps you in that darkness. And I got lost in the darkness.
So was there a moment or a slow realization that something needed to change?
Well, they say that addicts have to reach their lowest point. They have to hit rock bottom. And for me, that was the case, unfortunately. But the gratitude I have is that I'm alive to share my story. And for me, after my mom passed, I had friends in San Francisco that were trying to help me. And I stayed with them at their place, and I continued drinking. I just couldn't stop. So I became an alcoholic at their place. And I just became a nuisance. I was just drinking. I was a calm, relaxed drunk, but I was just drinking all their alcohol and sleeping around and not going anywhere. And then finally, they asked me to leave. And I didn't want to go back to Los Angeles and continue my cycle and to torment my family members. So I was like, I'm going to just go to the park and I'm going to sleep at the park tonight. And I have my bottle with me and I think I'm going to be okay. And I got in the mindset of I was going camping. So I curl up, walk up the hill to Dolores Park above the Castro in San Francisco and slept under a tree with one eye open. because you're a little nervous or you're not sure what to expect.
Sure. It's a great, yeah, big, beautiful city, but it's a big city.
And I was from the barrio of Los Angeles, so people, I was street smart, and I felt safe. I could take care of myself. And luckily, nothing happened that night, but I was cold and woke up in the morning. Okay, what do I do now? The first thing you do as an alcoholic is make sure you have a bottle. Because then if you don't, then for me, I would have withdrawals. And I didn't know what withdrawals were. Withdrawals is basically when you don't get the alcohol in your system, your body will respond in such a negative way. And it attacked me first with anxiety. So it gave me just like a crazy anxiety attack. And then it made my body retch with pain. Like I was on the verge of death. And it turns out alcohol withdrawal can cause death. And it's more deadly than heroin withdrawal and more common. And no one told me this stuff. I just was put in the hospital with alcohol poisoning while I was there and was diagnosed with some kidney problems and liver problems because I was just basically drinking all the time. And I sought out a shelter. So I made my way south of Market to a shelter. And the shelter is basically an institution. And it's as cold and hard as an institution of that nature you'd expect to be. And I found in there, you're basically enclosed with people that are like you, addicted to something and miserable. And it's not a good place because you're confronted with the worst in humanity all in one room. And I couldn't do it. I tried to sleep at the shelter. It didn't work. I managed to get a job too. While I was in the shelter, I worked as the innkeeper in San Francisco for a historic inn. And I thought I could pull it off. And then I found myself drinking the leftover wine from the end of the night. And my alcohol addiction consumed me literally again. And so it was just a cycle of I can do this and I can't. And then finally, I went to detox in San Francisco. And this was in the hospital. A social worker approached me and said, here in San Francisco, we have the best programs. We can help you. Do you want help? And I thought to myself, I'm killing myself slowly with alcohol. I can't fight it alone. And it was a statement to myself that was hard to make, but it was a life or death decision, literally. And I said, yes, I want help. And so luckily, I was able to go into a detox program. It was a 21-day program, and I was with other alcoholics and other meth addicts was the most common there. And we slept there. We were confined to that space for the 21 days, and we had medication available to us. And I was a wreck by the time I arrived there. I had been on the streets for several months, sleeping mostly in Golden Gate Park, which was beautiful, but not an ideal sleeping situation.
It wasn't really camping.
It wasn't really camping. And once I got there and got sober and got fixed up, they're like, we have other programs here available if you want to continue. And I'm like, of course I want to continue. And thank you. And luckily, they had a place there that was exclusively for gay men, a recovery home. And it was a three-month program. And in there, I got to hear other guys' stories and realized that's my story. We all have the same story. No matter what the addiction is, it's like a Shakespearean play. It's got it all. It's the comedy, tragedy. And I was like, I'm not alone. Because the whole time I was like, this is just me. What's wrong with me? And I realized it's not just me. Like everyone that's struggling with addiction, it's all this group of victims to whatever they're addicted to. And I made some friends there with guys, and unfortunately, some of them didn't make it. And it's hard to talk about.
Of course. Yes, I take the time that you need. I appreciate you sharing these stories.
And I think seeing that in my face, like, these guys are gone, that could have been me. That kind of lit a fire in me to say, I got to do this, not just for me, but for the others out there that don't have anyone to tell them that, hey, you're worth it. Don't give up. And so I continued and I finished the program. And then they had another program, luckily, that was an independent living program. And through that program, I was able to work for the detox program that I started with. So I got to come full circle and I worked in the admissions area. So I got to see some of my peers come through the door, and I had seen that they had made this an enabling system for them that just continued the pattern, and they were working the system and they were still locked into their addiction. And so it's hard to see, but there were success stories, and I got to see those firsthand as well. And luckily I got to be one of those success stories and got out of my addiction, mostly because I was determined to save myself, because I didn't want to kill myself slowly. And I knew inside that there was me. I was still me inside. And so I wanted to give him a chance and to fight for him. And luckily I did, and I had the resources and support and help offered to me. And I hope that people out there hearing this realize that there's programs, people, and that you're loved. And most important is to love yourself. Do it for you.
It's all got to start there, right?
And that's where it started for me. And that's where it's got to start for everyone. And for those of the family members and friends of people struggling with addiction, it's a very difficult and tormenting road for the loved ones to see and to experience, because they don't know what's going on with you. They just want to love you and get you better. And don't exclude them, because that's what I did. I isolated myself and didn't reach out and was so ashamed and guilty for the addiction. And don't be ashamed. Don't feel guilty. These people love you. They want to help you. Let them.
What surprised you most about the early days of sobriety? Like, that's something no one warned you about.
How many triggers there are. How many opportunities there are to use again. And that's, I'm glad you touched on that, because that's one of the hardest things to stay sober with, when there's so many triggers and it could be available. So it's very important to get out of the environment and to get rid of the friends that use our enablers. And I know it's a good time and they like to party and it's tempting, but it's also going to kill you. And just, yeah, stay strong.
That kind of leads right into the next thing. What are some of the things that you had to unlearn about yourself or your habits or in your social world?
When I was in San Francisco and I had been sober for about a year, I was like, I wanted to socialize with gay guys. And again, the place to do that is gay bars.
That's so a majority of the events that we list are at gay bars. And people ask, don't you have anything else? I was like, we're trying, but we're not the ones throwing events. We just list them.
And right. And for me, I'm in a place, I was an ex-smoker as well. So I had smoked for 20 years. I had quit smoking. and other people in my life still smoked, and I didn't have a problem with it. The same with the drinking. I was able to compartmentalize my experience from the bar itself and the alcohol available there. And granted, it is a little taxing because I'm not in the same mindset as the guys. As you see them drink more and go to a different place, and you're in the same place, and it gets a little taxing for me sometimes. So I can only go to the bars for maybe an hour or 2 hours. And it's not the alcohol itself. It's just maybe the environment.
Understood.
Yeah. But the alcohol itself, I've been able to stay away from, and I don't have any temptations for it. And one of the ways I was able to get my mind off of alcohol was I would replace it with the thought of when I was at the lowest, when I was sick and vomiting for hours with retching, stomach aches. So the lowest point I was at, I would visualize that. Anytime I would see alcohol or smell alcohol, I would just visualize my lowest, most sickest moment. And then it became where anytime I thought about alcohol or seen it after that, I would have that little gag reflex. So it's like I turned it into a bad thing for myself mentally, and it turned into a physical thing. But after that, I never had a problem. Luckily, I'm so grateful because I know, and it took me years, Billy. After my mom passed, that was in 2010. I didn't get sober until 2016. So this was a 6-year period for me of struggling with alcohol and being sober for a few months and then just wrestling with it again. And it was a long, arduous thing. It wasn't just an overnight or a few months in the making.
And you say, like, you limit your time at the bar. How else does sobriety change your relationship in the sense of belonging, since so many things happen at the bar?
It doesn't affect my interactions, because like I said, some guys have been there and they've been drinking and maybe a few shots in, and I used to be there. I'm not going to judge someone for being there. But at the same time, when they're blowing alcohol and they're out of it and I'm not, it gets a little annoying. It's like,
I'm right there with you.
and that's just me.
It's not. You know? It is not just you. This is why I just go to Brian and like, it's time to go. This crowd is cooked.
And I'm not.
Right.
I'm out of here. But I do cannabis, and cannabis is something that's been a constant in my life, and it's part of keeping me sane and keeping me at low anxiety levels. And it's a safe alternative to alcohol. And when I say I'm sober, some people say you're not really sober because of the cannabis. And what I say is that sobriety is what it is to you. It's a personal, individual journey, and find what works for you, not what other people say will work for you. You'll find that on your journey, what works and what doesn't, and just gravitate towards what does.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm in the same boat as you. I am not a drinker. Again, I'll have a shot or something, can maybe take the edge off to do some karaoke, but that's it, because I'm a driver and I don't want to be in a tent. I know that might not be a thing anymore, but it still was burned in my head when I moved down here.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
good and enough. That's so my bad. Motivation.
If the climate's nice, it's not so bad.
Right.
But here it wouldn't be so nice.
And I am an avid pot head. People sometimes say, you're not sober. I'm like, I don't drink. I'm not a drinker.
Yeah, exactly. There's the levels. And there's a thing also called harm reduction. And harm reduction was foreign to me. It's a concept that they had embraced in San Francisco when I was there. I don't think they embrace it so much anymore with the political differences and divides going on. But anyhow, when I was there, it was introduced to me. It's called harm reduction. And basically what that means is, say, as an alcoholic, I'm normally drinking 2 pints a day. Well, maybe instead of drinking 2 pints, maybe I'll try to drink a half a pint today. So that means not going full on with whatever your addiction is, and try to wean yourself off, especially with alcohol. Like I said, it's very dangerous just to stop and say I'm stopping if you're a heavy drinker, because that could be very dangerous to your body in several ways. Don't do that. But if you can wean yourself off that's ideal. And so harm reduction is just the concept of maybe replacing your normal, say, if an alcoholic, instead of drinking a pint, maybe I'll drink or I'll smoke some weed. I'll get me an eighth or whatever.
Right.
And smoke that instead. And that worked for me. And I've always been a cannabis user. I am an avid fan, and it's got so many health benefits to it. And it's a great alternative to alcohol, which is poison for your body and mind. And so that works for me, and it works for a lot of people.
Now, how did sobriety impact your creativity, your work?
You know what? I had a false sense of who I was at the bar because the alcohol, of course, melts away your inhibitions. And that was the case for me. It would make me a little bolder and sometimes embarrassingly so. I'm really glad that alcohol is out of the picture in that sense. But it did help to break the ice because I was such an introverted, shy person early on in the days. And alcohol was just a way for me to have false confidence. And it was, so that's changed.
What helps?
Did it answer the question?
It did, yes. What helps you stay grounded when things get hard or tempting?
I never get tempted to have a drink, but I do get stressed. And
we are a business owner. That just goes hand in hand.
I'm recently married.
Yes, yes. Congratulations on that too, by the way, since the last time we've chatted. Yes.
Yeah, I love my husband, Chris. He's so wonderful and supportive. And he wanted to be a part of this in some way to support me. And I told him, I just wanted to do this to share my story with you and the listeners on just a personal level to start off 2026 in a direction that maybe, you know, you want to understand more. Maybe someone wants to get sober, and I don't have the answers, Billy, but I do have my journey, and anyone that wants to reach out is welcome to do, and I can answer questions the best I can as I have time to. As Billy mentioned, I'm a business owner, and there's a lot going on, but I am always here to help, and I do help. There's a lot of homeless here, and I could see that they're in need of help. So look, dogs when they're hungry, and water when they're thirsty, and clothes if we have them, and extra shoes if we see that they need them and can fit our size. A lot of the people here have bigger feet than we do for some reason.
Oh, wow. By
the way. But yeah, but we do what we can. And it's very important for me as an addict to pay it forward and to at least cushion the blow for some of these people out here. It's very hard to see and hard to watch. To answer your question about the bars, don't bother me so much as seeing these poor people out here on the street homeless, and that was me. I'm like, that was me. And that's very, it's home. It's, I could still be there.
Right.
And people on the street don't last too long. And so I just wanted to let people know that if you're down and out, just don't give up. Never give up on yourself.
What's something that sobriety gave you that you didn't realize you were missing?
It's like you get rid of something and you have to replace it with something else. And for me, I replaced it with a lot of self-love. So I put the energy that I used to put into my hustle to get, because I used to panhandle to get my alcohol. So I thought of that energy and all that would take to get what I needed. And I took that and put it towards me and said, how can I make myself better? And then that's how I planted the seed, nurtured the seed and seen it blossom. And then from that, it opened up so many other positive windows. So it's once you get that positive energy and energy of your own that you're putting into something wonderful, which is yourself, then you're going to see that attract other positive things. And it's just wonderful to tap into that worldly energy that still is out there. It's all around us and it's accessible and free. And sometimes with the distractions in life and politics dragging you down, don't let the distractions pull you into the darkness and away from the light, because it's there.
If you could talk to the version of yourself who wasn't ready yet, what would you say?
I would say, just be strong and to communicate. And if you don't know something, ask questions, no matter how embarrassing it might seem. And just to be invested in yourself. It's not selfish to love yourself.
And that kind of leads right into, for someone who's listening right now, who's either sober, curious, or struggling, what would you want them to hear without any kind of pressure or judgment?
With no pressure or judgment, I would say always love yourself and try your best to do what's in your own best interest, something that's good for you. We know what's not good for us, and we know the people around us that are good for us, and we have to be strong and brave and be able to cut those things out and be solely invested in loving yourself. And Winston Churchill said, right when things are the darkest, you think there's no hope, he said three things: never give up.
That's awesome.
And that's what I can offer.
No, it's awesome. That's a great quote. How can friends, partners, or chosen family better support someone who's in recovery?
That's a tough one, because as an addict, sometimes you don't know what's going on with yourself. And it's hard to explain to others around you who are watching, sometimes helplessly, wondering, how can I help you? How can I help you get rid of this problem? And the answer is, the best thing I think they can do is sometimes give you the space and the freedom to go through what they're going through, because they're going to do it. And there's sometimes nothing you can do about it, and it's painful. But be strong and try not to enable too much. Sometimes, like if a mother sees a son in need of a fix, they're going to give him money for the fix. And it's hard not to. And I would say sometimes you do have to give them that money for the fix. And that's your form of giving love. But keep in mind that you also have to give them the unconditional love of, this is who they are, and sometimes I can't change them, but I'm going to love them and let them know that they're loved and be there to listen.
I'd like to go back for a moment when you were saying that you were panhandling to pay for the alcohol, because obviously it doesn't just rain from the sky. So you would literally, would you do it all day? Would you do it till you had enough and then you would go buy? How did that work as far as?
Sure. Yeah, I could take you through a couple of scenarios. When I was homeless camping out in Golden Gate Park, I was staying near Ocean Beach, which is by the windmills. So folks that have been to San Francisco might be familiar with that area. So I would tuck away into the trees. There's not a lot of trails and places you could tuck away there. And not far from there is a Safeway. So I would go to the parking lot of Safeway. Usually I would have a buddy with me. And when you're homeless, you get encampments and you have local or a fellow addict band together for right. A common cause. And so we would go there and we'd be out with our sign and people would give us money and we would get enough money to get our booze. Luckily, I was an alcoholic, or I'm an alcoholic, so alcohol is really cheap. So we wouldn't have to be out there too long. And I think one of my most interesting panhandling stories is on the other side of the park, which is the Judah Street area. There is some upper scale restaurants. And a buddy and I came out of the park, out of the trees with our blankets, and we looked like apostles, like Jesus with apostles, just ragged off of the trail. And so I walk up to these people who are seated outside of this nice restaurant, and I say, oh my gosh, we're hungry. Can anyone help us? And as I finished those words, mostly women opened their purses and started throwing 20s and 10s at us. And it was like one of the most amazing things and one of the most generous offerings of people. And that's another thing that I'll speak of as well, is the generosity and kindness of people that are out there wanting to help you, who are strangers wanting to help. So I wanted to talk to that as well. That's out there.
They're accidentally enabling. They're trying to help, but...
And enabling is a kind of a tricky area, because if we wouldn't have had the alcohol, we would have gone through withdrawals, and there's other consequences. But I think in that moment, it was what we needed, and they resonated with that somehow. And it was just an incredible outpouring that was unexpected.
Note to self, dress up as wise men, fancy restaurant.
Yeah, put a blanket over yourself. Look like an apostle as much as possible.
So I jest, but what does a good life look like for you today? What is your success story? Where is it you're at 9 years later now?
Wow. Reflecting back, I would have never envisioned this. When I was at my darkest, if I could have had a glimpse of what my life is today and the possibility of being a business owner and being the kind, gentle, generous man that my journey has made me, I think that's one of the most important things for me, is that the journey I went through made me a better person, and it made me grateful, and it made me braver, and it made me want to tell others like me that have struggled with addiction to just hang in there, do the best you can, and to just never give up on yourself.
Donnie, I can't thank you enough for trusting us with your story, with doing this today. This really means so much. This is how I want to start out 2026, is to give people a glimpse of hope.
Yes, please be hopeful and stay in a place of gratitude. There's people in other countries that are a lot worse off than we are here, and we have food in our stomachs, and we're doing pretty well. So just be grateful and kind.
So where can listeners follow, support, and connect with you and Roro Dogs?
We would love to see them at our shop here. We're right on 7th Street and Roosevelt Street, between 7th and 5th Street. And our hours are a little wacky right now. We're still trying to figure out how we want to proceed going into January. But right now we're Wednesday through Friday. So we'd love to see you in the shop if you could stop in to the shop. Otherwise, you could find us on TikTok. Or you could find us on Insta. And you could also go to rorodogs.com, and you could see our website and check out our offerings there. On TikTok, I believe that we are Roro Dogs, and that's where we're most popular. We're viral on TikTok, so check us out there.
Awesome, Donnie. Thank you again. I love you guys so much.
Thank you, Billy. Really appreciate this, and thank you, and Happy New Year, everyone.
Another reason we love this community.
I'm Daddy Dave, your friend in the fight to end stigma. And I'm the founder of Team Friendly, here today to talk about injectable HIV meds. Let's talk about long-acting HIV medications. It's a total game changer for both prevention and treatment. Instead of taking pills every day to prevent or treat HIV, long-acting options like injectable PrEP or injectable HIV treatment can be given once every 1 or 2 months, some even less often. That means fewer daily reminders, more privacy, and more freedom. But they're not for everyone. You'll need to visit a provider regularly for your shots. And missing an appointment can raise your risk of resistance. We don't want that. Some people also experience side effects like injection site pain or fatigue. The good news? These meds are safe, effective, and helping more people stay undetectable or HIV-free without that daily pill. Talk to a healthcare provider to see if long-acting options are right for you. Let's live and love stigma-free of HIV.
Pride lives here.
As we wrap up this episode, I want to start by saying thank you, truly, to Donnie from Roro Dogs. Donnie, thank you for trusting us with your story. Thank you for your honesty, your vulnerability, and your willingness to show up and talk about sobriety in a way that's real, grounded, and human. Stories like yours matter more than you probably realize, and we're incredibly grateful that you shared it with the community. And to anyone listening right now, if this conversation stirred something for you, or if you're thinking about your own relationship with substances, support, or change, you're not alone. Help doesn't have to start with a big leap. Sometimes it starts with a conversation or knowing where to look. Here in Phoenix, there are LGBTQ plus affirming resources available. The Southwest Center offering behavioral health services, HIV prevention, recovery support, and inclusive care for our community. And then for the LGBTQ youth and young adults, there's 1 in 10 providing support groups, mental health resources, and community connection. There's also the LGBTQ plus center in Southern Arizona. Now, while it's based in Tucson, they offer virtual resources and referrals that many folks in Phoenix can also access. If you or someone you love ever needs immediate support, 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available 24/7. You can call or text 988, and they're trained to support LGBTQ plus callers with care and respect. Starting the year can be hard. Asking for help can be harder, but both are acts of strength. We also want to give a big thank you to Lookout News for helping keep our community informed with queer-focused reporting that actually reflects our lives, and to Amanda Renfrew, the tax person, for supporting the show and showing up for our community with inclusive, judgment-free care. We appreciate you both more than you know. And just a quick reminder before we go, there are 2 Grit parties coming up, and you'll find all the details at gayphx.com. If it's happening, if it's community, and if it's worth knowing about, it's where we're listing it. As always, submitting events to GayPHX is free, and if you got music created that you want to share, music.gayphx.com is open and growing every day. To you listening right now, thank you for spending your time with us. Thank you for being a part of this community, and thank you for choosing something local, something queer, and something built for us. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll see you next week.
We're together, the sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side.
Thanks for hanging out with the Gay PHX podcast.
Be kind.
Be bold.
Be you.